Just tell us when you're ready, Mr. Savant.
Ma'am?
Just tell us when you're ready.
2 seconds, I'm sorry.
That's all right.
Believe it or not, I have been actually sitting outside waiting there.
We knew that.
I can run down real quick and get something passed. It's Judge Rich's court, so you guys know how that
is. No comment. Right, Mr. Salvant.
Well, let me just start by saying that I assume that everyone has read the brief. Really, my whole argument is just going to be based on almost a brief word for word. So I won't get too much into detail because I think it'll probably be a little repetitious. A couple of things that I would like to highlight, though, is that as you have, I'm sure, read from my brief, the points that I'm making are legal sufficiency and factual sufficiency. A lot of it also based upon the accomplice witness rule. And basically our argument is that there really was no true evidence in this case other than circumstantial evidence, with the exception of the defendant or the appellant, Mr. Torrey, the testimony from his girlfriend who was an accomplice to this, who was also found or pled guilty to being a part of this and received 12 years. After that, that's really all they have. Now, there is some sort of a question as to whether Mr. Torrey made some statement to his girlfriend's sister, and we would just argue that even that is pretty suspect, considering that here's a lady who was there, who was with him, and all of a sudden, you know, it's a member of her family who comes forth and claims that all of this was said. I mean, I don't think it's a far stretch to see that she has an interest in seeing her sister be charged with a lesser of aggravated robbery as opposed to capital murder. But besides that, there's nothing else. There's no other witnesses. There's no other no type of DNA. There's just no evidence at all. So those are our first two issues, the legal sufficiency and the factual sufficiency. The next is, and the point that we really would emphasize is the motion for mistrial. Whenever the trial counsel for Mr. Torrey moved for a mistrial based upon the fact of, well, based upon jury misconduct, in so much that one of the jurors knew one of the witnesses, I shouldn't say witnesses, one of the people who was involved with the case, quite possibly being the victim's mother. You know, in any type of case, whether it be a misdemeanor, even a Class C, if you're going to take it to the extreme of some sort of a traffic ticket, if you want to go to a jury trial, the whole purpose of a jury trial is to have it as sterile as an environment as you could possibly have. Once this juror and this victim's mother or cousin started talking and started conversing, I mean, that contaminated the whole process, and we feel as if the judge at that moment should have, probably on our own motion, ruled for a mistrial, and certainly once the defense counsel moved for a mistrial, should have probably granted that mistrial, because the fact that this is possibly the victim's mother, in and of itself, in our opinion, creates harmless error. I mean, a harmful error right there. And I know that a lot of what the state has said is based upon, well, there wasn't any juror misconduct because they didn't really talk that much. And Judge Wilson even said that, hey, once they started talking, they shut it down once they knew that they were possibly involved in the same case. Well, I don't think the standard is just so much that they talk. The fact that they even knew each other should have been brought up, and that should have even been an issue, much less the fact that they then spoke about knowing each other, and then also the case in so much as that they could be involved in the same case. And finally, the last point that we would make is the failure of the trial judge to grant the defendant's motion as to having a lesser included of aggravated robbery to the jury charge. And we certainly believe that at most what the evidence is going to show was that Mr. Torrey entered this house planning to rob these people. What happened after that, we just don't know. Now, granted, I mean, common sense could tell us one thing, but we're talking about what we actually know, what the evidence actually shows, and we don't know what happened after that point. And even the fact that he went in to rob these people, I mean, that's still just a testimony from his girlfriend, who was charged with aggravated robbery. So while a jury could have found Mr. Torrey guilty of capital murder, they also could have found of the lesser offense of aggravated robbery, and certainly that becomes clear because his accomplice was charged with that and pled to that. So at the very least, he should have at least been given the opportunity to have a lesser included in his jury charge. And that's really what we stand on. That's what we base our brief upon.
All right, Ms. Messerly.
May it please the court, counsel. Like Brian, I don't want to be repetitive and read my brief to you. Most of what I'm going to, really everything that I think I need to say is in my brief. I just have a few quick comments. I'd just like to respond to a couple of things that Brian argued. Initially, regarding the legal and factual sufficiency point, or the first two points, and regarding Ms. Esther's testimony, I would just assert to you that this is the sister of the accomplice, and she went to the police and said, this is what happened, this is what they told me that they did, this is what Mr. Torrey did. And I would just assert to you that actually I would kind of give her more credibility, because by doing that, she implicated her sister. And I think there's also evidence in the record that this caused some problems with her family, that her mom was angry at her for doing this. And not only did she implicate her sister, if you recall, she was on probation for, I think, a possession of drugs, some type of drug charge. And she was behind in paying her fines. And she knew that. And she went to the police station knowing that, which really just kind of put the spotlight on herself. And so I would just urge you to find that she's more credible because of those reasons. And also recall, she didn't get any kind of special deal for testifying. She didn't get a break on this probation or on this fine or anything. So she really kind of, I find her to be more credible based on that.
And wasn't she testifying not only what her sister told her, but also what the appellant told her directly?
Exactly. Yes, she did. She testified that Mr. Torrey told her that he'd hit an easy lick, that he'd had to use his baby, which is his gun.
Okay.
And it's a 45 caliber gun. And I also, just back to this point, I don't think that Ms. Esther's testimony is the only thing that connects Mr. Torrey to the offense. If you recall, there was some gun evidence. There were three 45 caliber, I think, fired rounds of ammunition. I'm sorry, I'm not quite up on the terms, found near the bodies. Well, and he had also, Mr. Torrey had told Ms. Esther's that he used his baby, his 45 caliber gun. There was also a 45 caliber bullet pulled during the autopsy from one of the victims. So I think we have some connection. I mean, we definitely have some connection there that tends to connect Mr. Torrey to the offense. As far as the jury misconduct issue, number three, appellant's third point, I would characterize this as good conduct on the part of the juror. She did exactly what Judge Wilson ordered her to do. As soon as she realized that this was a prior coworker, not a good friend, this is a person that she hadn't seen in over a year. And remember, they ran into each other down on the plaza level getting coffee. As soon as this juror realized that this is a person who may be observing the very trial where I'm serving as a juror, she ended the conversation, she reported it to Judge Wilson. Judge Wilson extensively questioned her, would she be biased? Would this affect her decision? Does this relationship, would it impact her ability to decide this case in any way? And she clearly said no, no, no. And as appellant has said in his brief, we don't even know for sure what this person's relationship with, who this person's relationship with, I can't speak, sorry, was with in this trial. I mean, we don't know for sure if this is a mother of a victim or if there was someone that was related to the defendant. We just really don't know that. So I would just urge that there was no error here, and I don't see how the appellant was harmed. As to the lesser included offense point, appellant's fourth point, I think there was some testimony from Mrs. Anderson, the accomplice, that appellant did say, we are going, you know, we're going to go hit an easy lick, which to her meant we're going to go rob somebody. I would assert to you that's not the same thing as saying, I'm only going to rob someone and not murder someone. Because if you look at what at Mrs. Anderson's statement regarding what he told her at the time, he also said, I'm going to do whatever it takes. He took a .45 caliber gun with him. The evidence shows that he was in the house when these boys were shot, and there's certainly no evidence that anybody else did this. So I would just like to submit that he wasn't entitled to his lesser included charge. If you look at all the evidence as a whole, there's no evidence that said if he's guilty, he's only guilty of this lesser included charge as aggravated robbery. If there's no questions, I will just stand on my brief. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Sofant.
I can just add a couple of things. I don't believe what the state has just said, that the gun was never found on him. This whole idea that there was his baby and so forth and so on. I mean, they found the shell casings, but there was never a gun that was found on him. And it's kind of how their whole case is. It's a lot of making these stretches. There is no evidence. It looks like it. It sounds like it. But there's nothing to really connect there. And that's what their whole case has been about. And one thing that I think is interesting and that I would bring to the court's attention is the state never denies anything that we say in our brief. They only minimize it. For instance, it's not so much that there was a relationship. State just minimizes it by saying, well, we don't know what type of a relationship it was. There's still a relationship as far as between the juror and the member of one of the victim's families. I also think it's interesting that, you know, it's kind of like saying, well, they spoke, and yes, there was misconduct there because the juror shouldn't be speaking to anyone about the case, but as soon as they figured out that they could be in the same case, they stopped talking. Misconduct is misconduct, no matter how you do it. I can't run through a red light and then realize that it was red and say, well, hey, I didn't realize it at the time, but now I know, so therefore it never happened. It's still wrong, no matter how you try to slice it up, and the state never denies that. They never say that, you know, that they shouldn't have been talking or that, you know, that there was no relationship. They never say that. They just simply say, well, we don't know what type of relationship it is. Well, regardless if it was the victim's mother or the victim's brother or sister or cousin, they still shouldn't be talking, and that's what this is about, and that's the whole purpose of the jury system. I mean, the jury is supposed to be, like I said, it should be a very sterile environment. They should be away from everything, listen only to the instructions of the court, and if those instructions are violated, then that individual has not had an opportunity to a fair trial, and that's what this really comes down to. And so, you know, I would just ask that you don't minimize the fact that these people did have this conversation on something that is as serious as a capital murder case. And just keep in mind that while we don't know if it was a mother, we do know that there was a relationship there. We do know that these two individuals knew each other, that in the middle of this trial they did speak, and to a certain degree they spoke about that case, whether it be that they were on the same floor or they had the same judge or whatever that discussion is, they did speak, and that is misconduct.
All right, thank you, Mr. Sofant. Ms. Messerly, we appreciate your arguments and your briefing today. Your case is submitted. The clerk will now adjourn us.